This is not a pansy liberal show. It's Bart Cop Radio.
USA Today, with their crocodile tears about how tough Bush is having it with the media. Headline, Bush becomes the focus of media's unsparing eye. Well, yeah, after four damn years, it's time. Subheadline, war deaths and prisoner abuse turn up the heat. The images coming out of Iraq have been frank and brutal in the past weeks. From the faces of the U.S. war dead and the caskets in which they are buried, to photos of sadistic prison scenes played out in newspapers and on the air. In the wake of intense publicity over new books critical of Bush, increased U.S. deaths in Fallujah, and the uproar over the scandal involving Iraqi prisoners, experts predict coverage will continue to focus on this administration's misses, not hits. This could set off a renewed animosity between the administration, known for secrecy, and the media that have chafed under it. Oh yeah, they're so chafing. They're bowing to his wish. They're little puppy dogs on their back feet, begging for a little tidbit from the master. Please. God, it makes me sick. You've got so many different questions on so many different fronts, all in an environment where the U.S. is supposed to turn over power in a few weeks, and all of it coming off the deadliest month since the war began, says Judas Maximus, host of ABC's This Horror. There would be something wrong if it weren't getting this much coverage. Susan Page, USA Today's Washington Bureau Chief, says the prisoner abuse story reinforces the perception by some people, oh yeah, there are a couple, that the administration doesn't have the situation in Iraq under control. That means this particular incident gets more coverage than it would otherwise, and it means it has more impact, too. This has prompted the Bush administration to go under damage control, with Bush himself talking to Arab TV to condemn the abuse as a highly unusual move. It says something about how serious they take it, says Fox News' Kevin McGee. Who ever heard of that guy? They go on and on about how terrible it is that the media has actually taken a look at Bush now after four damn years. But my favorite quote is from Tim the Whore. He says, "We try not to let polls sway our coverage, and we do our best to be fair and objective," said the lying whore, who works for Karl Rove. "It would be a disaster for our business if every time a president's polls were down, we declared open season on him." Listen to Russert. "Oh, we can't be too tough on a president. That wouldn't be fair." Hey, F you, Russert, you lying pig. You quit called the election for Bush because you love him so much, and you haven't laid a glove on him since. When you went over to the White House to interview Bush, every time he asked a question, he gave you a silly ass, "Oh, well, Tim, if what you're asking is this here, if you're asking if I'm a good American, then the answer is yes." And then Russert said, "Well, thank you for being so frank and open, Mr. President." Oh, God, it was sick. Russert, you are a whore. You're on Karl Rove's payroll. When the 2000 debates were going on, after every debate, you got faxes from Karl Rove pointing out minuscule, teeny, tiny errors. And then Russert rushes to the headlines. Oh, Gore's lying again. Gore can't tell the truth. Gore's out of control. Meanwhile, Bush is a master of foreign policy, and he looks so presidential with his deer-in-the-headlight eyes. God, Russert, you are a whore. With Cokie Roberts retired, I guess you're probably the stupidest whore in Washington, Tim. You're about as fair and objective as I am.
When Ronnie wrote his letter to the people telling them that he had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I didn't really know or understand what that meant. I really didn't. But I found out. Those with Alzheimer's are on a rocky path that only goes downhill. Ronnie's long journey has finally taken him to a distant place where I can no longer reach him. We can't share the wonderful memories of our 52 years together, and I think that's probably the hardest part. And because of this, I'm determined to do what I can to save other families from this pain. And now science has presented us with a hope called stem cell research, which may provide our scientists with many answers they have for so long been beyond our grasp. I just don't see how we can turn our backs on this.
I'm not going to attack Nancy Reagan. It would serve no purpose. It would only make me a bully. She's been through a lot. But I would like to attack the habit of most people in Washington to beat around the bush and not say what they mean. They'd rather get lost in some rhetorical jungle that has several meanings, so everybody gets like a movie. At the end of the movie, you don't know really what happened. You can, if you think the couple got back together, fine. If you didn't, fine. Why can't people speak more plainly? Instead of saying, I don't see how we can turn our backs on this, it would have been easy for Nancy to have said, Mr. President, tear down this wall of religious superstition and open the gates of science and logic and let sanity replace the religious insanity in the 21st century. God has given us the tools to fight or slow or eliminate probably hundreds of individual diseases, but because we want to please the invisible cloud being and the religious lobby, we have chosen to put handcuffs on our doctors and our scientists, and we refuse to allow them to treat people who need help. That's insane. Poor Ronnie is too far gone now to save, but there must be millions of people who could benefit by having this stem cell research go forward, and surely over the course of a few years, millions of lives would be saved. But instead of calling on the president to put the superstition aside and do the right thing and save millions of lives, she meekly said, I don't see how we can turn our backs on this. But Nancy, I wish you had the courage or the temperament to go a little bit farther, because you have, I assume, every Republican's ear, and even those of us who think your husband was a horrible, horrible president. Nobody wanted to see him go out this way. And if it wasn't for the religious insanity, Reagan might be speaking at the 2004 convention in New York City, but no. We have to please the invisible cloud being. That's got to be number one. We've got to keep science and logic chained in the basement. We can't let them out. To quote another president, that would be wrong.
The apology many in Iraq, the region, and the wider world had been waiting for.
I told him I was sorry for the humiliation suffered.
And I'm probably not the only one up at this table that is more outraged by the outrage than we are by the treatment.
And the humiliation suffered by their families.
But I'm also outraged by the press and the politicians and the political agendas that are being served by this.
Mr. Bush went further, acknowledging that the country's interests around the world have been seriously damaged by what happened at Abu Ghraib.
It's a stain on our country's honor and our country's reputation. I fully understand that. And that's why it's important that their justice be done.
And I'm is more outraged by the outrage than we are by the treatment.
The president also publicly criticized Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld for not telling him
the severity of the scandal. In an unusual display of finger-pointing, the president admitted he'd scolded Rumsfeld in a private Oval Office meeting.
I tell him I should have known about the pictures and in the report.
But I'm also outraged by the press and the politicians and the political agendas that are being served by this.
Still, Mr. Bush said he won't ask for Rumsfeld's resignation.
Medical update. I told you I wasn't going to do any of these unless they were funny. And this is one of those, I can't believe that. Funny stories. As you know, we had the big premier poker fest in Las Vegas on my birthday, which I'm so lucky to have it on September 12th. When I got out of bed the next day, I had torn cartilage in my left knee. I hate that. If I'd gotten drunk and fallen down the steps, and had torn cartilage, well, then that's what you get for getting drunk. But that's not what happened. Because I'm an idiot, we planned the poker fest to start at noon. And since they had, well, not free Chinako, but let's say free-flowing Chinako, we drank tequila for 7 hours starting at noon. So here I am, 7 o'clock, in fabulous Las Vegas. It's just starting to get dark. The city is about to come alive, and old Bart is too sleepy to keep his eyes open. Way to go, genius. And the reason I'm sure I didn't fall down any steps is because in Vegas, I guess everybody gets up once or twice during the night to take care of business. And when you do that in Las Vegas, you can't help but, I mean, it looks like the sun is outside. You open up your eyes and you see this Niagara of color swirling all around the city, and you just can't help but walk over to the window and stare at it for a second. Well, I did that. I don't remember if it was once or twice, but I just remember getting up in the middle of the night and everything being fine with my damn knee. But I wake up the next morning, Sunday, and right away, I try to get out of bed, and the pain, oh, the pain. So I figure you can't tear cartilage in bed. So I just figured it was a sprained knee. But here we are, what, 7, 8 months later, I'm tired of waiting for the sprained knee to heal. So I talked to the doctor. I mentioned this before. He got me on my back and grabbed my leg and went all kinds of different directions with it. And it didn't hurt, but it just scared me to death because I knew of the pain in the knee. And then he grabs my ankle and my knee and he starts whipping things around. And he said, well, I don't think you have. He said, is your leg catching? I don't know if you've ever had torn cartilage in your knee, you know what a catch is. I said, no. And he said, well, then I don't think it's torn. Why don't we just give it a few months and see if it heals? So here we are 7, 8 months later. I'm tired of it. So we make an appointment. I go get my MRI. And if you don't know what an MRI is, it's a magnetic resonating imagery, something like that, which I understand it to be. It's all about magnets. It possibly works on the iron in your blood. I don't know. But somehow they got all these magnets going. They slide you in a little tube. They lay you down on a cot, and they slide the cot inside this coffin-looking thing. And they turn on all the magnets. And then the magnets, I think, line up your the iron in your blood, and then they take a picture of it that way. Oh, and they had all kinds of signs. Do you have any metal in your body? Well, yeah, I do. I have a pin in my ankle from a long time ago when I was a kid, when I broke my femur twice. That's a story that'll be in the book. So I told them about that. They asked if you're claustrophobic, and I said no, which at the time was true. By the time they slid me in that coffin thing, I thought, well, I was getting a little bit of the heebie-jeebies. Anyway, supposed to be there 1:30, get there 1:15, and it's a good thing because the idiot, I can't believe they put these people in charge of medical facilities. There was only one lady in the front. She was, oh, she had a title. She was office head or something like that. Older woman, maybe 65 or so. Not, I mean, she wasn't too old to where she couldn't make sense. She was just a stupid woman. There's this other, I'm sorry to say, stupid woman in front of me, trying to talk to the lady. She wanted to pick up her x-rays and deliver him to some doctor. And they said, well, you know, we're not really supposed to release him to the public, but maybe if, you know, we call your doctor and this and that, something, something. So she said, what is your name? And she said, Butts. And the idiot behind the counter says, is that B-U-T-T-S? And she said, no, it's B-U-T-Z. So she does some other stuff, and then she says, what's your last name again? And she said, Butts. So she says, okay. Then she's looking at something else and says, what's your first name? She said, Janice. So she shuffles some more papers. She's got the other lady on the phone that of the office she's trying to get the x-rays from. So then she looks at her again and says, what's your last name? And she says, Butts. And she says, that's Janet, right? She says, no, Janice. Janice Butts. And I'm thinking, lady, I'm over here not in the conversation. I know what the damn lady's name is. You're involved. How come you can't remember Janice Butts? What's wrong with you? Concentrate. Do your job. So then this poor lady who's trying to get the stuff done, she can't remember her doctor's name. She knows that his last name is Ward, but that his first name was a really, really odd name that began with a J. So this nut job behind the counter pulls out her list of doctors and says, There's a Joseph Ward. Yeah, Joe is a really, really strange name that starts with a J. And she said, no, that's not it. And she looks at the list again. She says, there's a Dr. John Ward. Is that him? And the lady says, no, John is not a really, really strange name that starts with a J. So this went on for a while. And I'm thinking, oh, geez, these people are in charge of making my knee work again. That's way creepy. So finally they figured out that the doctor's name was Wade, not Ward. His first name was Wade, and his last name was some wacky name that starts with a J. So this has taken 15 minutes for the lady to give her name and her doctor's name. It took 15 minutes for that to happen. I finally get up there, fill out the forms. They take me back in the room. Had me take my wallet and my car keys, whatever, lock them in a little box. Then she says, yeah, lay down on the cot. So I do that. And she straps my knee in. You know, you got to hold still for this to work. So she straps it in real tight. And then she leaves the room. And I'm thinking, well, what are you doing leaving the room? Let's make sure things work here. It's like in a lab. She goes outside and she's looking through the window, guiding the controls. So she presses the button. I go sliding into this thing. And it was just a little creepier than I remembered. Last time I had this knee operated on for torn cartilage was 87, 88, something like that. And it was just a little strange. She asked me what station I wanted to hear on the FM, and I'm thinking, what is that about? But I forgot, it's really loud. There's a lot of clang, 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 and beat, 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 and tick, tick, and clang, clang again, which could do a little job on your psyche when you're inside this little tunnel. I'm supposed to be taking pictures of my knee. Why do I have to get all the way inside the tunnel? Why couldn't they put the camera that takes the pictures near the outside of the tunnel? So if you're doing a knee or an ankle or something, you don't have to get 5 feet into the machine, but no, they got their rules. So I'm laying there. I'm trying to read. My mind races. It pretty much races all the time. I can't do one thing at a time. You know, if I'm working on the page, I got to have CNN going. I got to have something going on. I generally do two or three things at a time. When I'm watching TV, I'm generally reading a newspaper and watching the TV or whatever I'm doing several things at a time because my mind just races like crazy and I just have to give it something to do to occupy it. I can't, if there's two people having a conversation on TV, I got to fill in the time between the questions and the end. You know, if they're having a conversation, that's just not busy enough for me. I got to be busy. So laying there for 45 minutes in this coffin was, you know, it didn't scare me. I just thought, Christ, it's going to seem like hours and hours and hours if I just sit there with nothing in my mind. So grab me a Newsweek. It's kind of hard to lay on a slab and hold a Newsweek up in the air for 45 minutes. I finally got that done with. I'll get my results probably in a week, and I'm sure there's no way, there's just no way at all they're going to say it's not torn. Because if it's not torn, why 8 months later am I limping? So that means I'm going to have the surgery, and that's no fun. I've had it before. What they do, they tell you to count back down from 100. You go 100, 99, 98, and before you can say 97, they say, can you lift your leg? Because the surgery is over. And you try to lift your leg, and you think, Jesus, that hurts like a son of a bitch. What do you want me to lift it for? No, that's all you can do. You know, the only way you can get healed is to work your knee that they just got done cutting on just 15 minutes ago. And here you are laying in the recovery room, and they want you to lift your knee a bunch of times. It's like, Jesus, lady, I just met you. Why do you hate me so much? I don't think it's going to take much time away from the page. It might take, I don't know, unless I have to elevate it. It's going to be kind of hard to type with my knee higher than my head, but that might be a day or two off, and there's no telling how the scheduling is going to work. This could happen a month from now. It could happen next week. I don't like surgery. Surgery's like gambling. You know, if you lose at gambling, you lose your money. If you lose in surgery, there's no more page. So, everybody say a prayer for old Bart that I don't need surgery.
Don't touch that dial. Though you don't have a dial because you're probably listening to this on the computer.